Welcome to the D Word, the UK's only weekly internet radio show that talks dementia, with me, your host, Peter Hill. Thanks for joining me here on the D Word. Good to have you company for the next hour. My guest this week is Kerry Higgins, who has championed the cause of unbanked carers in her native Wales, being a carer representative on the Welsh Government's cross-party group on dementia. We'll be talking about the forthcoming updated Dementia Action Plan for Wales, Kerry's study for a Masters in Dementia, and her experience of caring for her dad, all after a bit of Ringo.
I don't see me in your eyes anymore. Oh, why can't I make them shine as before? I don't see you or your heart in your kiss. Then you should sigh that your mind you resist. There was a time life was fine, love was ecstasy, but now I doubt as before.
Ringo Starr still going strong, and I Don't See Me In Your Eyes Anymore from his latest album. My guest this week is carers advocate Kerry Higgins. Kerry, great to welcome you as my guest here on the D Word. Want to talk about the caring role, most definitely, amongst other things. But I know you cared for your dad, and I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about him. He sounded like a real character. He had the nickname, I understand, Die Helicopter, which just tell us a little bit about Dad.
Yeah, definitely. I cared for an aunt prior to caring for my dad, and then my dad got diagnosed with mixed dementia. But being a real community champion and a veteran, he, you know, was quite familiar with being called Die Helicopter, because that's what he worked on throughout the RAF. And of course, when he developed dementia, and, you know, sort of on the bookcase, his memories were sort of further back. You know, that was something that was comfortable and familiar for him, so we continued to use that name, obviously with his permission, and he frequently drew a picture for me. Instead of dad, he'd put die helicopter and a helicopter and a kiss on the bottom. But I think that just indicates that, you know, how people identify themselves, you know, their stories is so important, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very important, people's stories. And also when you're caring, your story is very important. But sometimes, you know, that can be a difficult thing, can't it? Because you're talking about stuff that's sometimes not even very, not easy to talk about.
No, and I think it's when you're caring for somebody. I mean, I sort of, at the time I'd stepped out of my career role, and being a real sort of family person, of course, you know, I wanted to support my dad, and my mum was disabled also, so it was a natural thing to do. But I guess, and I always say, if I knew then what I knew now, then maybe things might have been slightly different. Of course, I would have continued to, you know, to show them the care that they needed, but I would have figured in that too somewhere more, maybe.
Yeah, you know, we all say hindsight is a wonderful thing, don't we? But, you know, and also as a carer, I mean, you know, people say people are living with dementia, but really it's the whole family. It's everybody's living with dementia.
Absolutely. And you know, when you get a diagnosis, the family gets the diagnosis. And when I was caring for my dad, you know, my daughter was a young teenager at that time, and it was part of her life as well, because we worked hard to continue those relationships. So, and I think there's very little, you know, there's very little support out there in the context of what happens next after a diagnosis, but it's even harder for the family because, you know, they're almost, well, not forgotten, but sometimes they're not included in, right, okay, what can we provide to help them?
I think it's, you know, it's generally the case, isn't it, with illness, that people concentrate on the person with the illness, and it's the carers and the people around that, you know, are secondary, or as you've just said, sometimes get ignored.
They do, and I think, you know, I mean, I always made sure that if anybody had a question to ask, they'd ask my dad, and I would support him in that. So we never took away his, he was the main, you know, he was the main man, the boss, he was dad, he was, you know, the person with dementia. But I think, you know, the times where people have said to me, you know, when we're looking for support, oh, you can manage, can't you? You know, it's your family, or you'll be okay, you know, and that's quite frustrating because people are making assumptions on our behalf.
Which is, you know, it's a difficult thing to take. And I suppose in terms of being in the role of a carer, I know this it's probably may sound strange to some people, but you have to recognise you're a carer as well, because sometimes it may just be, oh, it's dad, I look, oh, it's the family, we're looking after this person. But you're not actually recognising yourself as a carer sometimes.
No, and I think that's right. And I think the research states that it's something like takes up to 2 years for an individual to recognise that they're a carer. And I didn't recognise myself as a young adult carer, if I'm honest. But I think the important thing is, of course, we provide care and we love the people we care for. But when it becomes, you know, within 11 years of caring for my dad, I had 11 days off ill. Then actually that blurs the line. That's no longer just about love and relationships. That's become something more. And that's when, you know, we realise, oh gosh, you know, I've not looked after myself here, which is really important.
Yeah, it's a, you know, it's a vital part of things. I mean, people going through, you know, what you've gone through, and, you know, sadly, you've lost your loved one. Some people may have said, well, I'm going to shut the door on that. That's it. Thank you. I'm going to move on with my life. But, I mean, you're doing a master's in dementia for a start, and you really have carried the fight forward in terms of the fight for carers' rights, haven't you?
Yeah, and I think, you know, I was I know they say never ask a lady her age, but when I was caring for my dad at the age of 49, I realized that I'd missed out on further education because of different circumstances. So I studied a degree while I was caring for my dad. Past that, unfortunately, then my dad passed away, and I then began caring for my mum, who had small vessel disease. And I then decided when my mum passed away suddenly that, you know, I'm playing catch up on my life here. So I went straight into my master's. And I'm hoping by the end of the month I'll know how that went.
Well, good luck with that. We'll keep our fingers crossed for you. And
Thank you.
yeah, you said at the beginning of the conversation, if you kind of knew then what you know now, what are some of the kind of major headlines of things that you think that would have been really useful when you went through what you went through?
I think that there's the emotional, there's the psychological, and there's the financial. You know, carers are at the moment living in poverty. I know we're all facing those situations, but ultimately, you know, it's costing unpaid carers to care for families sometimes because they can't access benefits that, you know, some people can't access carers allowance. So I think, and looking back, you know, when you get a notice through the door that updates you about your future pension status, and you realise that actually you haven't got enough, so that's the kind of financial, it's the financial pressure on you, because some people give up work, and the emotional sort of aspect is that we, you know, we kind of forget about ourselves and we become isolated as well. You know, our relationships stop with other people. And also it's the impact of the role of caring for somebody. You know, we've got so many people caring over 50 hours a week. And actually, you know, that impacts us. You know, it impacts our bodies, it impacts how we recover from things. So it really does impact our health.
And you've become a carer representative on the Welsh Government's cross-party group on dementia, if I'm right. I mean, how did you get involved in that?
Well, I think, to be honest, I was brought up, my dad was always Kerry will sort it. And he always believed that everybody deserved to have their voice heard, no matter what that was. So I began, I guess you could say, inviting myself along to lots of different things. I'm really huge, you know, sort of ambassador for co-production and for having people's rights acknowledged. And I, with some colleagues, we set up a lived experience network, and then we sort of developed relationships with lots of professionals, and then they invited us along to be part of the cross-party group where, you know, it's really important that people with lived experience get an opportunity to have their voices heard.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
letter in my mailbox today. You were just checking if I was okay. And if I miss you, well, you know what they say. Just once. In a very blue moon, just once. A very blue moon, just once. In a very blue moon, and I feel one coming on soon. No need to tell me you'd like to be friends and help me get back on my feet. If I miss you, well, it's just now and then. Just once in a very blue moon. Just once in a very blue moon. Just once in a very blue moon. And I feel one coming on soon.
Never tire of listening to the voice of Nancy Griffiths, once in a very blue moon. All our shows here on UK Health Radio are available for listen again and download from the UKHealthRadio.com website. My guest on the D Word this week is Kerry Higgins. Yeah, I think, you know, it's vital, that co-production element. I mean, you know, when you were telling your stories and telling people at that kind of government level what life was like, what was their reaction? Were they, you know, surprised or?
I think there's always this, I guess, hesitance, isn't it? Because when you're building relationship with professionals and sharing your story, some, you know, it hits them in the heart and it really influences how they're going to work going forward. But there are some that are kind of, oh yeah, that's another example of somebody's story, you know. So ultimately, I always, you know, insisted that you know, that we gathered many stories and that other people were invited to share their stories as well, because there's nothing worse than sitting in a room of people that are going, oh gosh, this is really boring. You know, I've heard this over and over again. So ultimately it's about continuing and just, you know, continue to have those voices shared and never giving up, which is draining sometimes, but it's what we have to do.
Yeah, sure. You know, I appreciate it must be. But, you know, the more voices you get telling more stories, people will begin to realise the old saying, if you've met one person with dementia, you've met one person with dementia. So everybody is different. And then in talking to those professionals and getting yourself on the Welsh Government's cross-party group, I guess one thing they've got to do is take your stories and turn them into some kind of national policy and strategy, which I understand they're doing with a national strategy for unpaid carers at the moment.
They are. I think it closed in the middle of April, but there was a consultation out for unpaid carers, but there was also a consultation out on a dementia strategy for Wales. And that what they're trying to do differently is to ensure that the strategies are co-produced, in the sense of that, you know, that they're engaging with more people with lived experience. Now, unfortunately, consultation and co-production are not two words that belong in the same arena. But I know there's a real push to want to do things differently, and, you know, let's hope we achieve that, whoever comes into sort of power.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's always a difficult thing in terms of politics and politicians. You've just alluded to the fact that, you know, one particular party may want to go down this route and suddenly you're making progress with them, and another lot come in and you start going down a completely different route. But I think that, you know, the problems should be shared across all political parties, shouldn't they? Because, you know, they're fairly obvious. Things like the NHS and social care at the moment seem not to be in the same room.
I think, you know, I always say when I'm, you know, involved in conversations around unpaid caring, okay, I cared for somebody, several people that were living with dementia, but ultimately people living with dementia also have other conditions potentially. So I always say it's everybody's business. So across any particular government, and it's not just about, let's talk about unpaid carers, sure, you know, it's a huge, and it should be a huge focus, because potentially for every condition, for every social situation, every medical situation, you know, there might be somebody that needs the support of an unpaid carer. And at the moment, specifically in Wales, we provide the majority of care.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you're not alone in that. That's a worldwide issue in terms of unpaid caring. And I guess it's all about, you know, I've looked a little bit at the Dementia Action Plan, and it mentions things like team around individual approaches and, you know, all get around together. It just, the one thing looking at it, it seems so obvious from the outside that you need that at the beginning, but it seems to be something we have to keep banging on about, that, you know, we need to approach this as a team.
It is. And I think, you know, that team around the individual in some context is talking about a team of professionals. I mean, to me, the team around the individual, whether it's talking about hospital discharge, whether it's talking about local authority, whatever that is, the unpaid carer should be the number one person on that team list, because ultimately, you know, because we know we've got huge issues around hospital discharge and you know, circumstances, you know, and I think it's really important that we include unpaid carers at every step. We've had, you know, we've all read stories on the internet around unpaid carers being asked, you know, to take their families home because care is short, and actually carers feeling obliged that they've got to bring their family home. But how do they manage that when they're also in a career or in a job? So I think, you know, approaches need to change and attitudes need to change as well. We're not the fifth emergency services. Actually, there are more unpaid carers than NHS staff. And specifically in Wales, we provide 96% of all the care. So it's about time that you know, the approach and the respect, you know, replicates the facts that I've shared, really.
Yeah, you know, I think that perhaps the problem is that you're not seen as having a career as a carer. And, you know, you're doing a job here, whereas if you're in a room full of medical professionals or people with lots of, you know, letters after their name or whatever, It's really about seeing unbaked carers on exactly the same level because of your knowledge and lived experience. And I guess what you're doing with your education path must help in that, because when you're in one of those meetings, if someone says to you, well, you're just an unbaked carer, you can rely now on, a fair amount of academic background to say, well, hey, hold on a minute, I've got all these qualifications in this.
You're right, and I'll be honest, and I've said this openly, I've studied and will continue to study, throughout my caring role, as well as my degree, my master. I study something like 30 to 40 different courses from end of life to medication, you name it, because ultimately I felt maybe an obligation to match people academically. And what's really interesting now is that, I know unpaid carers that provide medication, have to give controlled drugs, have to provide certain treatments, things like that. And I think now, because people know me, if they want a piece of research or they want information, they come to me. But isn't it awful that it's taken all that time and for me to have to wear a cap and gown for them to see me as an equal? I think that's awful, because the expertise that unpaid carers have, and even talking about things like end of life, unpaid carers are caring for people of end of life with no training, very little support. But actually, how many general staff would be able to provide that care?
Sell me four wheels and a trunk. I said, man, there ain't no engine. He said, the engine's just a bunch of junk. He said, you don't need no engine to go downhill. And I can plainly see that that's the direction you're headed in. And he handed me the key. And I said, no. Have a drink for a year. Oh, one glass of wine on my birthday. If my birthday wasn't too very near. Lord, he must have put me in a state of shock, cause I made it for about 2 weeks. And then he sent me a bill that knocked me flat off the wagon, back down on my feet. And I said, no deal. You can't sell that stuff. Stumbler friends, I expect to die that way. Oh, it could be 20 years from now, could be most any day. But if there ain't no whiskey and women, Lord, up behind them heavenly doors, I'm gonna take my chances down below, and of that you can be sure. I said, no deal, you can't sell that stuff. One more deal, I'm going back to Tennessee. I said, no deal, you can't sell that stuff to me. One more deal, I'm going back to Tennessee.
Love that. Guy Clark and No Deal. We've got some great guests lined up over the coming weeks, and you could be here chatting on the D Word. If you have a dementia story to tell, then drop us an email to tdwradio@gmail.com. Back to my guest now, Kerry Higgins. Yeah, and I think, you know, you know far more than your average GP. You get, you know, they get fairly scant training because I've asked them in terms of dementia. So you've got a lot more knowledge than they have. And also, that someone put a post on LinkedIn probably about 3 months ago, something like that, that said, do you know the average barista has more training than a dementia care staff member? Now, I don't know whether that was true or whatever, but most of those people that are caring for people living with dementia also need that solid base of training.
They do. And I think, and I'm familiar with that report, I won't say who wrote it, because I've got to be honest, I actually took umbrage to why connect dementia to a barista, to be honest. But I absolutely agree. I mean, you know, I've cared for 5 people at end of life, and nobody gave me any specific training. You know, my dad was on controlled drugs. He needed very specific care because he had Lewy bodies mixed with another type of dementia. And nobody said, well, why didn't you try this? The only people that did were other carers, you know, that were going through similar things through peer support. That's how I learned, you know, that's how I learned what could help me. And then I shared that with other people, what maybe could help them.
Now, local authorities are found right have a duty to involve carers in decisions. You know, to your knowledge, how many actually do that?
I think based on the research and the, you know, the reports that I've sort of focused on, very rarely does that happen. And when you get a public ombudsman that has to do an investigation and raise their concerns about that happening, and I think, you know, I'm not knocking, they do, you know, there are some local authorities that do great work and some that are really supportive in the dementia context, but from the unpaid carers' perspective, you know, we've still got people that are waiting for their rights in law to be given to them for carers' assessments. You know, people are waiting long times for that. They're not getting the support they need. But I think part of that is that the legislation is interpretable, you know, forward, backwards, and good and bad. And I think that's one of the issues, is that, you know, we all understand things differently. And maybe when we say, I give an example, I asked for respite to study my degree, and I was told, no, we can't do that. You know, so I think it's almost as if we need to start again and say, look, our rights are legal. The legislation is, and policy is a legal document. You know, it's got the royal thing on it. I think we need to be clear and almost start from the beginning and say, you know, this is what this policy or legislation means.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you've hit upon an issue there that, you know, you can produce a strategy and produce a policy, call it what you like. And unfortunately, some of them become kind of dusty folders on shelves that people don't look at. And, you know, the real big stage is down at community level. How do you actually make all this count?
And I think there's lots of work happening at the moment where people with lived experience are spending time training professionals, how to support unpaid carers, how to do carers assessment. And though I'm, you know, hugely proud of the people that do that, I kind of think, why should we? Because ultimately, if you're being supported by somebody that's professional, they've got a code of conduct, they've got, you know, they've got, their role demands certain things of them. So when they're doing a carers assessment and they call it all matter of other things, you know, they really should be getting it right. And that's not always happening. And I think sometimes we allow we allow authorities to get away with that. You know, no, you shouldn't have your own interpretation about what that carer's assessment is. It's quite simple what it is. But I do think we let people get away with that.
I think, you know, one thought I've always had is a few years ago, I think it was Channel 4, had a programme called Back to the Floor, where the chief executive of McDonald's went and flipped burgers for a day or whatever. Other hamburgers are available. But he learned more in that one day than he'd learned for a whole year full of board meetings. And I just wonder, your carer's assessment, you know, well, just come and live here for 2 days and there's my assessment.
You're right. And I've been calling on, you know, whenever I see a minister or, you know, somebody in a sort of strategic role say, well, of course, we're doing well. I always say to them, well, how come you've got X amount of people that haven't got a CARES assessment? And my comment to them is, you know, you need to get out of your offices, put your trainers on and start running around and actually speak to people. And I did challenge a health minister to care for somebody, you know, for a couple of days and see how that differed from his office role.
Yeah, no, I think that's, you know, that's very important. It's kind of, you said a little bit earlier about starting at the beginning. If you were starting at the beginning, you'd think, well, this is the obvious with staying here because I'm going to be ruling this particular area. I'm going to be looking after unpaid carers in my paid role of whatever. Well, surely I've got to find out what they do and what their problems are. It seems that everybody's coming halfway through, whereas they should have come in at the beginning.
Yeah, and I think it's quite plain. It's quite, you know, I really don't understand how, you know, thinking of a public ombudsman report that was launched recently, an Association of Directors of Social Services report. And that was kind of like, you know, actually, there were quite a few issues in there. And to be honest, I really don't get it, because we're talking about, you know, strategic managers and directors that are being paid huge salaries, and their role for their departments is to ensure that they acknowledge the policies and legislation of their local people within their authorities. And I really don't understand how they're not understanding what that is.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, do you think we overcomplicate things at those levels? I mean, you've been involved at government level. I get this distinct feeling that things are totally overcomplicated, because a lot of things, as we've been saying all the way through this conversation, a lot of this stuff's obvious.
I think it's about accountability, and I think it's about, you know, I mean, I myself and some other unpaid carers gave evidence to several committees over the last few years, and now all of a sudden they're starting to do something about it. But we're in the same situation. I've been repeating the same story for the last 10 years, and I just think it's about accountability. Now, if I was the minister, and I know the minister that deals with my with our local authorities, in the end did kind of say, right, this has got to be sorted. But ultimately, if you've got true accountability and governance, you should never get to that point. So when you get that Carers UK or Carers Will track the app that says, you know, an X amount of carers have not had a carers assessment, then you need to be cracking the whip from that point onwards and not waiting years for that, you know, for that to happen.
Yeah, I think, you know, you need accountability without a doubt, but you need just integration. So everybody's singing from the same hymn sheet and everybody sees what's going on. And, go back to this kind of difference between the NHS and social care and people's understanding of who does what and what happens where. And it just seems to be completely covered in some kind of maze that is very difficult to get through.
It is. And I think, you know, we talk about integration, and I've heard somebody in a meeting this morning say, you know, of course we need integration and you get integration in this. And actually say, well, you don't, because, you know, as an unpaid carer, my saying always was, I'm stuck in the middle between health and social care. I'm the one that's going round in circles. And I think that's a true reality for many unpaid carers, because, you know, we haven't really got integration in the true sense of the word, because many people are still saying that they just feel it's the passing of the buck, isn't it? Oh, we don't do that, we're health. Or we don't do that, we're social, you know. It's just frustrating. So I think it should be about, you know, if we're going to do integration, let's do it properly. And less evidence, and let's all talk the same language.
No, absolutely spot on. I think hit the nail squarely on the head there, Gary, in terms of things. I mean, and some of the other issues, I mean, just to broaden it out a bit in terms of unpaid carers, you've got to look at a lot of stuff as well. I mean, you've got rural communities there in Wales, haven't you? You've got a language. People may wish to, receive stuff in the appropriate language, etc. So, there's a lot of small print involved there as well as the major headlines.
There is. And I think for me, it all boils down to one thing. It's about acknowledging the person you care for identity. We've got multicultural societies as well, and rural areas. And I think, you know, services struggle as they are to reach the people that are in, you know, within sort of a couple of miles of them. And I think I really feel for unpaid carers that the struggle to get that support, because, you know, they do live in areas where there's very little facilities, though I have to say there's some great examples in some of the rural parts of Wales in the dementia context, where, you know, there was a postman that was delivering information and advice on his round to farmers that were affected by dementia, because they couldn't get out and people couldn't reach them as well. And I think that's a great example. But I think, you know, we always say there's a horrible term, and it's something that a term that I really do not like, is that people are hard to reach. Well, you know, we can reach people when we want. So ultimately, whether that unpaid carer is living in a rural location or they speak a different language, it's our responsibility to ensure that we can provide the support that they need.
Yeah, and I think, you know, your story of the postman, all power to him, brilliant him doing it, but really, he shouldn't be doing it. There should be someone doing it. You know, someone should have looked at that and said, how do we overcome this problem?
Exactly, and I think that's something that, you know, we see a lot as unpaid carers, and I think that's back to that sort of integration as well, and the, it's, you know, the isolation that unpaid carers feel, because you don't know what you don't know. And actually, if you're communicating a service or something that's out there to help people, if it's worded really strategically, and I spend a lot of time supporting services and organisations to look at the language they use. I had a gentleman a few weeks ago was caring for a family member saying, I had five people contact me and I've no idea who they are and what they're doing because all they did was strategic speak at me. So I'm always very, very, you know, thorough on that, you know, when we are sharing information about what's out there and available for people, that the language is right, because otherwise, how are you going to know that it's there?
Yeah, I think you've hit another problem there. There are a number of languages in the world, and strategic is probably one of them as well. Nobody runs a course in that. Sadly, time's bringing us to a close. It's been really fascinating. And all I can say is actually take my hat off to Wales, because at least you have got a dementia action plan and also a national strategy for unpaid carers coming, which other parts of the UK are still struggling to do.
Well, I'll let you know how successful our plans are, definitely in the future. And of course, there'll be the eyes of myself and many unpaid carers that who are having their voices heard at the moment. So we'll let you know how that goes.
Well, Kerry, it's been a real pleasure. Fingers crossed for the Masters. Good luck with that. And just keep on doing what you're doing. And thanks for being my guest.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks to Kerry for telling us her story and for championing the cause of unpaid carers there in Wales. And I wish her all the best with her Masters. That's all for this week. Thanks to Angela, my production assistant. Next week, I'm going to be chatting to Susan Gowan, whose book Dancing in the Face of Death tells the story of how life changed when her partner Barbara was diagnosed with frontotemporal dementia. So until then, thanks for your company and take care now.